Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Royal Rehab Up. That's right. Today, we're going to be covering the Meghan and Harry Oprah interview. We know you have thoughts. We all have thoughts. So thank you so much to Rob for actually letting us cover this. And I am Sasha Joseph, and I'm podcasting from the Bay Area. And today, I'm joined with a wonderful co-host, Sarah Ferguson. How are you, Sarah?
Hey, guys. I am doing stupendously. I honestly feel like I have an emotional hangover from the doozy of the CBS special yesterday, but I am so honored to join you and to discuss the Meghan and Harry special.
Right. Just so everyone knows how we even got connected last night, I felt like I was tweeting about it so much, and Sarah and I were tweeting at each other. So Sarah really came up with Royal Rehab Up. And I just thought it was so much fun that I had to reach out to Rob, and he said yes, and here we are.
That's so exciting. That is so exciting.
I know, and it really feels like a whirlwind. So I'm just, again, glad to be here. But before we start, and to those of you who are wondering what the heck's going on, why did this show up in your podcast feed? I'm here to really bring you in the loop. Yesterday, there was a highly anticipated interview with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. They were interviewed by Oprah. They were formerly known as the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, but following a lot, and I mean a lot of controversies, which we'll get into today, they announced that they'd be stepping down as senior members of the royal family in January 2020, so a little bit more than a year ago. And the couple, you know, since moved to L.A. and have a son, Archie, and in February 2021, so literally a month ago,
weeks ago.
Yeah, Sarah's also our expert, the royal expert here. The Queen confirmed that they'd also lose their royal titles and not return as working members of the royal family. And, you know, they shared a few statements on, you know, their Instagram, basically, you know, the yada yada, like, they're still family, we love them, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd love to hear from you, Sarah. Like, what are your thoughts? You know, how are you connected to all of this? What's your royal family IQ?
So I wouldn't say I'm a royal family expert, but a deep appreciator of the royal family. So I have been, obviously, I'm American, you're American as well. So monarchy and the royal family and everything that goes along with it has just always been a point of fascination for me. And there is a bit of idealization of being like, you know, they're princes and they're princesses and they live in this gorgeous castle and a palace. And there's a lot to that. But the more research you do into the history of the monarchy, the more you realize all of the hurt that's behind it, all of the darkness that's behind it. So it's really more than the crown. It's more than the pretty dresses. But I guess my claim to fame of being a royal appreciator is that in college, I was a design major, although I electively and voluntarily signed up for advanced history classes in British monarchy.
Oh,
so,
wow.
For fun, as an elective, you know, some people take golf. I took this. I had to get special permission to get like a 300 level history class. And then ultimately people are like, wait, you are not a history major? Like, why are you here? I got found out at one point. I was like, it's fun. And I wound up getting like A's in those classes.
Oh my God. I love this. You literally were like the mean girl.
So a bit of a
history geek.
She
doesn't even go here. Like a moment.
I don't even go here. I had to get special permission from the dean of history.
So I'm so thankful that you're here.
Yeah, but I, you know, there's so much to know, and it honestly, it is hard to keep track of all the, you know, royal titles and who's who. Of course, I'm a fan of The Crown, which is, you know, it's fiction, but it's fictionalized around true facts. Also loved the show Victoria. And I am also prone to watch Princess Diana documentaries with a bottle of wine on a Saturday night and cry.
Yes. So, yes.
how about you?
Yeah. And for me, really my connection, I'm Indian. I moved to America when I was 14. So, you know, of course, the royals are actually a big part of Indian history. We were colonized by the British. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our artifacts and most of the crown jewels are in Britain, but they are taken from black and brown people. So it's an interesting history where my mom and I were talking about this, where she was also really fascinated by Diana when she was, you know, when Diana was around and in the late 90s when all of just 90s in general, where all of that stuff was happening. Diana was a fashion icon. So
absolutely,
it's always been a part like of a conversation in my family, like painful or not, right? Like some moments are more painful than others. And, you know, return the Kohinoor diamond back to us. It's a 105 carat diamond that they stole.
Wow.
And
so is it in... is it within the family jewels?
Yeah.
Like, and it's in the Queen's jewels.
Yeah. It's at the Tower of London.
Yes. London.
Actually. Yeah. So, yeah. I didn't get to go see it when I was in London a few years ago, but it's really interesting, like going to the museums and, you know, seeing like, oh, all of this was not borrowed. It was stolen. So it's been an interesting like history and interesting relationship where like, I agree, Sarah, like it's so interesting and amazing to get swept up into the wedding, especially, which is kind of how the interview also started, was about the wedding.
Right.
So, and that stuff, I also find myself fantasizing, but like, I've been known that these people are not good people, you know, and like I've studied them in Indian history. So and, you know, the last name Mountbatten is not cool. And, you know, it's actually painful.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's like an interesting relationship, I will say, with the monarchy. And speaking of the interview, like, what were your thoughts? Like, there was a lot discussed, but we'd love to
hear
it.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. In general, I thought it was a very interesting perspective coming from Harry and Meghan. This is the first time that they were able to speak out.
Yeah.
They've been, you know, very, I mean, as Oprah said, they were not silent. They have been silenced for 4 years. They haven't been able to speak their truth, and they've been letting or the family or as you know, a common word that they called is the institution has, which, you know, incorporates not only the family, but also the royal secretaries and the big guys that, you know, that controls a lot of what the royal family can and can't do over how that will make the family look. So they, you know, this is the first time that they were able to speak their truth. And I appreciate that. This was giving me a lot of flashbacks to some of the struggles that Princess Diana went through. Her interview in 1995 with Martin Bashir is amazing. Very, very interesting insight. It was also shown a little bit as long as, in addition to a further interview in the documentary In Her Own Words, where her friend Andrew Morton interviewed her. And there was just a lot of very eerie parallels, you know, upsetting too, because, you know, ultimately Harry grew up losing his mother at a very young age and saw that a big part of it was because of media. So, there's just so much to unpack.
Yeah.
I think you and I talked about we're going to kind of take into sections. You know, there's some great fun bits mm-hmm. to it. I mean, I really loved seeing where Meghan and Harry are currently living in Santa Barbara now.
Yeah.
Which coincidentally is like down the street from Oprah.
Oh, my, I know. That was the best part. And like really being able to see their chickens and, you know, like their animals, like it started with that where they talked a lot about their love for animals and Meghan's dog as well. So it was just beautiful. And the place where they were actually interviewing, like that pergola was like, imagine that being your backyard.
Gorgeous. Oof. I know. Apparently that was the beautiful location was apparently a neutral space. It was neither Oprah nor Meghan Harry's house. It was a secret friend, but gorgeous backyard. Can you imagine? And then can you imagine being a neighbor to Oprah? Like, that's the dream. If I can have one neighbor, it would be Oprah. She is a superb gardener.
Yes.
If anybody wants to follow her on Instagram, her crops are booming all the time.
No, she got that good, like, honestly. And and really, like, yeah. Also just to speak about Oprah for, you know, a second, what an amazing interviewer. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, we knew this. This is nothing yes. new. But I think for the folks that, you know, maybe weren't part of or didn't get to watch her show before, like, this is a masterclass in how to interview because, one, she's dealing with mm-hmm. such heavy topics. And two, right. she's able to do it with ease, but still press
yes.
them to be like, no, you exactly. actually didn't answer this.
Exactly. And I think that there's, you know, that was a really, you know, big push and pull of asking the hard-hitting questions, getting the information that they know that America wants to know, or the UK of, as mm-hmm. well, of course, the world wants to know, actually, is why did Meghan and Harry leave the royal mm-hmm. family? That was the overall arching theme of, like, why? What happened? What led to this? So having Oprah, who is always very delicate, very empathetic. You know, you feel like you can trust her. I don't even know Oprah, and I feel like I can trust her with my life.
Yes.
And having her be able to ask, you're right, the pressing questions, but do it with an ease so that Meghan can feel comfortable. Because, the elephant in the room is everything that they say is going to be scrutinized by the UK media and mm-hmm. the world. And it's going to, and Meghan, although they're not on the most spectacular terms with the royal family, they still have to respect them.
Yeah.
Because ultimately they're family. You know, at the end of the day, they're family, and all families go through struggles. Except the thing is that as we, you know, learned in the initial, like, talks, it's like they're not a normal family.
Yes.
You know, like Meghan, one of my favorite stories from this interview was Meghan's first meeting with the Queen.
Oh, yes, that I have that in my notes as like something to really start with, right? Like Meghan and Oprah, sorry, says this first, right? You're marrying into a 1200 year old institution. Right. Like the monarchy. Mm-hmm. This isn't mm-hmm. some like normal moment. And, you know, it cuts to like gorgeous shots of their wedding and all of these, you know, beautiful moments. But yeah, Meghan first talks about almost being naive and not being ready.
Yes.
To meet yes. the so, queen.
OK, so what happened was they were just meant to have a lunch
yes.
in the Royal Lodge where a lot of, you know, family members, like extended family members live. So we have like Fergie and Andrew lives there. Beatrice and Eugenie and her family lives there. So oftentimes it's the siblings that live there or like cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And this is pretty common. I'm pretty sure that Princess Margaret lived in this area as well. Back when she was around. So she was going to lunch in that area, both Harry and Meghan, and the Queen was finishing up a church service and she was like, I'm going to meet you. And Megan didn't even know how to curtsy.
Yeah.
So before entering, the home to meet the queen, she had to like get curtsying lessons from Harry and from Fergie, which is hilarious. But also it's like she was shocked because mm-hmm. she was like, what do you mean I have to curtsy? I thought that was just for like show.
Yes.
It's like, no, it's like, even though this is your grandmother, you're still going to curtsy every single time you meet her and see her.
Yeah, the best line, right? Or best interaction almost was like, Meghan said, but this is your grandma. And Harry says, yes, but she's the queen. And mm-hmm. that to me, right, like says almost everything we need to know about how right. unfortunately transactional the family has been, the firm, the institution, whatever, the monarchy has been especially to Meghan, I will say, where, the biggest plot twist for me is that they have an amazing relationship, or for the most part, with the queen, which, yes. I think, again, she's been vilified, at least for me. Like I've seen mm-hmm. how the queen, even with Diana, right? Like the yes. queen has been really like, it's almost placed on the queen, all the burden of the vitriol and all the frustrations and right. all of that. So to me, this was like an interesting opening, if that makes sense, because one, mm-hmm. Everyone knows how great Harry is as a partner. But to me, it was nice to hear that the queen also was like part of that. And like, it's probably also part yes. of the relationship Harry has with the queen, right? Like,
yes, exactly.
And we can talk about this later, of course, where like when Harry comes on to the next half of the interview, he was very adamant about respecting his grandma, the queen. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a moment of where he was going to push back or, like he was going to like talk badly. But instead, mm-hmm. he was very respectful. So to me, that shows that the queen has probably also afforded that respect back.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, it's always been rumored that Harry was the queen's favorite grandchild. Mm-hmm. It's been like a rumor that they've always talked about. I think it is sweet to see their relationship continue as much as it possibly can, because there's a lot of hurt. I mean, it was the queen's decision back in February to remove Harry's honorary titles and, mm-hmm. The royal patronages. And, ultimately, it is his grandma's decision. I mean, we can debate yeah. for an eternity how much is it the advisors pushing the queen to do something versus what the queen ultimately has say in. I find it a little hard to believe. Maybe I'm just being like an Anglophile. I find it hard to believe that that's what the queen really wanted. Mm-hmm. But we don't know. But ultimately, Harry said in regards to that was he was hurt, but he respects his grandma's decision.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, right, this is the classic like need versus want. And mm-hmm. and like, in India, there's like this movie where they talk about tradition and, tradition over everything. And that's almost what yes. and like that movie literally is about like family dynamics. So that's why I really laugh. Because yeah, it's to me, mm-hmm. it's like family dynamics is one part of it, but this is like the institution and when I say they, like everyone that's not Harry and Meghan, like really seem mm-hmm. to buy into that and are like shrugs almost like, oh, that's just what it is, period. And that's what I think was the ultimate thing that broke the camel's like last straw that broke the camel's back.
Right. Yeah, I do want to know. So Meghan said that she didn't do any mm-hmm. research about what it would be like marrying into the family. She didn't Google Harry pre-marriage. She had like a very like, princess fairy tale image of what it would be like. I just want to know, like, do you believe that? Like, do you truly believe Meghan didn't think about what kind of burden and responsibility you take on as marrying into the royal family?
Yeah. So that was also an interesting piece. We actually got a question from Carolyn about this that, even though she said this, even though nobody, especially American, can be expected to really understand the royal life and duties, you know, like how could someone of Meghan's status and age really not understand, you know, these basic pieces, like even the national anthem. I think even I know that, like, God Save the Queen, you know, I don't know the words, but like I know parts right. of it. So I agree that I kept thinking about it too. And then Meghan actually said this in the interview. She said, you know, as she's famous, she's been famous before this, you know, she yeah. is used to being around people of status. This isn't, she's not like either you or I who like really are commoners, right? A plebs Absolutely. In that way where, you know, we really would get starstruck by seeing anyone.
She said that mm-hmm. I live in LA. I see celebrities all the time.
Exactly.
Like she expected it to be like that, but, a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. And I want to
absolutely. Different.
Yes. And I want to make it clear also that, you know, for a lot of like, families, this isn't such a big deal. Like the queen, it's something that happens over there, you know, across the pond. And in the United States, like it's something where we're interested in Diana and we like to see Kate's wedding, but like that's kind of it yeah. for a lot of people. And I'm sure that's a moment for that, her too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an average American mm-hmm. is that it's more of like a fairy tale view of
exactly.
it. It's like we like some people might like the fashion. Some people, I personally watched both Kate and Meghan's wedding days.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, you know, it was a TV event and it was like, it felt like a big day, even from somebody across the pond. But yeah. So, I mean, for example, I have a friend who knew nothing about the royals and I was like questioning them and they were like, wait, no, what is this? So like, for example, I told them to watch The Crown and there was a lot of things that she was asking me. I'm like, you don't know this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't know about like even so like ironically. So guys, sorry, shocker. I'm not the Duchess of York. I might have the same name, but or a very similar name. I'm not her. Sorry to say. But at one time I was like trying to figure out a new Twitter handle and I was thinking like fake Duchess of York and they didn't get it because it's like because they're not tapped into it. It's not an interest for a lot of Americans. Mm-hmm. Like it could be for you and I who take a special interest in it. So there's some plausible deniability. I think, I mean, say that you didn't Google your fiance or your boyfriend. I'm going to call false. With
yes.
that. I mean,
I
Googled my fiance.
Yeah. I looked up.
I'm Googling all my fiancés.
That's what I was going to say. I looked up my husband and he's not even, oh, he's so annoying. He's not even good on social media. So I was like, is this guy okay? But, yeah, like you, that's the most natural thing to do. And again, like we're not stars. So I don't know if that's something like they just yeah. don't do because of all the fake news and all the like fabricated tabloid stuff that ends up
right.
being on. Like to me, I'm wondering if that's why she didn't end up, you know, Googling him. But right, like it's Prince Harry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, if you watch like E! News or anything, like he was on there. Remember his Vegas situation?
He was a rager back in the
yes.
day. Like he was like Bad Boy Harry.
Mm-hmm.
He was so like Princess Margaret. Princess Margaret was known for like being a partier and the life of the party and like being like such a star and like that. Yeah, it was Bad Boy Harry. Like, look at him. He like smoked weed once.
Yeah.
That was like a big deal. He partied. He like went on dates with girls. Mm. But
wasn't he naked
yeah.
in Vegas like this? Or
yeah,
shirtless something?
Yeah.
I can't remember. But yeah, like wild. He was wild.
Wild. But yeah, so ultimately, you know, after marriage, mm-hmm. Another thing that like in terms of like perceptions versus reality, Meghan spoke about how you're really just thrown into
yes.
this. There's, you know, you're not taught anything. You're not given lessons and it becomes a very isolating thing. And furthermore, they at one time, because she was in the tabloids, mm-hmm. early on so much for things that we'll get into next, I think. They basically said, like, you're everywhere.
Yeah.
And she, at one point, Megan's like, I literally haven't left the house in 4 months. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, why don't you just, like, lay low? And ultimately, she just said, you know, you're surrounded by people all the time, but you feel extremely lonely.
Yes, that's...
I've heard that before.
Exactly. I was going to say the if. We know who. Yeah. It's heartbreaking, right? Like, to me, it's so obvious that this couple, right? Like, Harry, because of his past trauma. For those of you, again, that don't know, Harry and William, his brother, actually had to walk behind their mother's casket in public.
Yeah.
And you could, you know, like, it's a heartbreaking, like, visual, if you want to check it out for yourself. And so I know that since Harry was very young, like, he's had a tumultuous relationship with tabloids, with, you know, the system he's a part of, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't know any better. But, like, you could tell that they want to be private so bad because they actually got married 3 days before the wedding.
Oh, that was such an interesting tidbit.
Yes.
So I loved that. And honestly, I think that was perfect for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that anyone who is in that family and they're marrying for love, like, you know, I do think William and Kate married for love, like anything. Like, if you are going to be put on blast on national television like this, then you have to have an intimate moment for yourself. So they spoke about how 3 days before their wedding, they got married before the Archbishop, and they had like that time for themselves because they realized that the wedding is not for them. It was for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how sad is that? I'm not married yet, but Sasha, like, how would that, and with all families, like, honestly, a wedding is partially for you, but it really is for your family,
yeah.
Right? It's like you're putting on a party for everybody else. But as a married woman, like, how would that feel having your wedding day and it just being like a blur?
That's what I was going to say. My wedding day did feel like a blur. It did feel like this out of body experience. My husband is Hindu. I'm Jewish. So and we're both Indian. So like we had a wedding in India for his family. And then one here where, you know, in Oklahoma, where I'm from, for like not my family, but like for the Jewish part of it, I guess. And then the Hindu one was in India. And yeah, it really does feel like it's for the family, and it's for
especially an Indian wedding, because aren't Indian weddings multiple days?
Yeah, Indian Jewish weddings, like, I mean, it doesn't. Yeah, mine was like 3 days. Listen, it was so much fun. Like, I loved every minute of it. I still rewatch my videos, you know, all the time, especially my friends dancing. But yeah, like it's a community affair. And that's exactly what this wedding was. And if that's not who you are, you know, like, God save you. Because, yeah, it's not easy. And which, you know, goes into why the Megan and Kate drama, which we can get into real quick. But
yes, let's get into this.
Yeah, and someone tweeted this. It wasn't me, so I don't want to take credit. But like, I have to say this, you know, that this isn't the first time that the Crown got upset over, you know, an American spilling tea. So wanna, you know, say that before we start, because I can only imagine what's going on back in Buckingham Palace.
They're spinning. Yeah, no, they're spinning their wheels. They're definitely a hot mess over there trying to, you know, deal with this. I did watch some of the CBS This Morning special. There was a continued special, and they did have some reactions from England.
Ooh.
Because they were saying it hasn't aired yet in England. It will probably in the next few hours. We're recording during the day on Monday. But so the newspapers have a more sympathetic approach than what they have in the last 4 years. People are saying that this is very damaging to the royal family. This is, the quote was, kryptonite to the royal family. You know, they're comparing it to Diana and how this is going to be like very close to home. they've heard this before. They've seen this type of story. And then just how, you know, ultimately, there's a huge discussion about how it's a very incestuous relationship between mm-hmm. the tabloids and the royal family. The royal family needs the tabloids to stay relevant, and they need to justify their existence. And the tabloids do it, and the tabloids need the royal family because they give them the story. So this was all some of the reactions from England mm-hmm. that I've heard. But let's get into the next part of this interview, yeah. which is how the tabloids treated Meghan and the whole Kate versus Meghan thing.
Oh, my God. Yes. So, you know, this to me felt like the biggest, like the other stuff. I feel like I was like, yeah, duh. Like the royal family sucks, like or not sucks. They're problematic and they have a lot of issues. So like I've been known. This just kind of gives me the like actual facts to back it up. Right. Like I get the bibliography yes. this time. I can yes. cite my work this time. But with the tabloid stuff, I couldn't believe the amount of spin, the amount of just nonsense lies mm-hmm. That was put out there, right? Like, so yeah, they call her Hurricane Meghan, which kind of, right, like sets the scenes for everything else, which basically Meghan is kind of blamed for everything and anything you can think of. Like, as you know, for right. Trump, there is, you know, like there's a tweet for that. It's almost like for Meghan, there's a headline for that. Like, that's how I felt.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
About this, like from, you know, what she eats to what she looks to what she dresses, blah, 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 blah. So, yes, yeah. You know, like it really starts with like Meghan, one, does not Google herself or doesn't look up stuff about her, which I also thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you thought about that.
I think that's something that a lot of celebrities say. So I've heard this a lot from celebrities that they don't Google themselves. They stay off the internet. I think that it takes a very big person to be able to do that. I think that. You know, I think that it's easy for you to want to know what people think of yeah. you, to people say of you. I do think Meghan kind of has a IDGAF. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
She doesn't care about what people like. She has that air about her. And it honestly just more does more harm than good. But I like I said, I think it's like I if you are in the public eye, how can you not Google yourself at least God. A few times, but she didn't know a lot of these headlines about her.
Exactly. Right. So we can kind of get into the headlines as well. So yeah, the first one was kind of like she was blamed for departure of high profile staff that kind of got glossed over. And this is the big one, right? The headline was mm-hmm. she made Kate Middleton cry, the future queen, you know, cry. Right. Over her demands right. on flower girl dresses, right? Like we heard about this.
Yeah.
This came out actually 6 to 7 months after the wedding.
Exactly.
And, you know, Oprah's kind of like, hey, I'm just a messenger. Don't come for me, you know, kind of deal. But, you know, they're kind of going through it. And Meghan was like, no, this is the one I knew. Let me school you. On what happened. Mm-hmm. Like, give me a second.
Let me break it down to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, turns out, buckle your seatbelts, everyone. Meghan was the one upset. And Kate is the one that made her cry.
Right. Yeah. So, I just want to preface this by saying this is a very emotional time. Number yes. one, any bride is emotional right before her wedding. It's stressful, especially this wedding. All these eyes are going to be on her. But if you guys don't remember back then, there was a huge controversy about her dad. Mm-hmm. Will her dad come to the wedding? Because her father actually sold information about Harry and Meghan to the tabloids. And this is something else that they covered in the next day special where the tabloids were really grooming her dad. They moved into an apartment across from him. Mm-hmm. They were offering money and gifts. And in fact, this happened, you know, around the time of the wedding. So they held on to that, ultimately, they held on to the news, and for 6 months, they could have broke some of the stuff, the thing about the flower girl dresses that weekend. But they and Megan said, you know, the tabloids don't report on the news. They create the news. And ultimately, like, Megan, around the time, like, they got wind of that was going to come out, and the dad, like, Megan gave her dad an out, like, we can bury this. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have, this doesn't have to go forward. Like, there's ways for us to have, like, a get out of jail mm-hmm. free card. She did say that, like, offering up this get out of jail free card to her dad means that they're compromised for the future. I guess you can only utilize, like, suppressing the media so much from what she was saying. And that might affect, like, down the road, her children getting protected. But long story short, there was this controversy about her father because these stories released, her dad did not come to the wedding. That's ultimately what their decision was. And on top of this, some sort of arbitrary BS about flower girl dresses. Yes. Like, are you kidding me?
Which, again, is the most normal argument a family would have. Like, as someone, again, that planned a wedding, like, yeah, me and my mom, like, argued a lot about silly things. Now we look back and we were like, we were a hot mess. What was wrong with us? But, you know, in the moment, mm-hmm. like, it really... You're under so much pressure, and my pressure is not the same as this. So I can't even imagine the amount of pressure Megan was in. And she even said, like, everyone around her was really helping and was really being supportive of her. But it looks like Kate actually was upset about something and upset about the flower girl dresses. And we don't know exactly what was said. And Megan said, like, she doesn't want to say anything because one, like, Kate actually did all the right things, like, sent her, you know, flowers and a note and apologized and actually took accountability, which I thought was a really beautiful way of saying what happened.
Yeah.
And that's why Megan actually is so frustrated and hurt, because it actually happened to her. And she asked, of course, the comms teams to dispel it, and they didn't. They didn't. In fact, you know, it's almost like they just kind of let Megan be the scapegoat so that Kate can still, you know, kind of be up there and be the like the golden child, the golden in-law, exactly. You know, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly.
And to me, yeah. I don't know about you, but I was so pissed, like, seeing that and hearing that, because you could tell that Megan's hurt.
Me too.
And, you know, you just, and Oprah, like, again, did a really great job, like, actually pushing enough to say, like, what's your relationship with Kate then? You know, like, what's going mm-hmm. on because of this? And it seemed like Megan has moved on from it, but... It just shows how nonsense these tabloids are, and just how awful and frustrating they can be.
I know. It is really frustrating. I think that was the biggest thing. And it was kind of a starting point for her, you know, getting fed up by the tabloids and the media and the lies, because everybody knew what the truth was. Everybody knew. The comms team knew. The family knew. But nobody would defend her. Nobody would set the record straight. Nobody wanted to put their neck out for her. And she started to see, like, where the line was drawn. And that was just the beginning. I mean, there's stupid comparisons between Kate and Megan, which promoted this, like, non-real, almost real feud between them. But, like... you know, Kate got praised for holding a baby mm-hmm. bump. Well, Megan was, like, ridiculed for it. There was this thing about avocado.
Oh, like, my God.
Ridiculous. And just, you know, there's just a different standard between Kate and Megan. Like, you know, the media needs to create a narrative. There's a hero and a villain, but this is not Survivor. Exactly. You know, this is not Survivor heroes versus villain. And Megan said, just because you love me doesn't mean that you have to hate her. And just because you hate her or like her doesn't mean that you have to hate me. And why? And nothing else besides the fact that this is just the thing from the beginning of time. You know, if there's two strong women or two women in general, the media or people have to pit them against each other.
Yes, that's exactly it, right? Like, we've seen that even with like rappers, with like Cardi B and Nicki Minaj, all of that drama as well. It's just, it's right. Wild that y'all can't let women live, for one. And yeah, secondly, mm-hmm. like, to me, I saw a little bit of an interview, like the clips are going around on Twitter. But first, sorry, I wanted to say, if you want to know like how crazy these headlines are, just, you know, they're floating around on Twitter. Like, someone literally made a whole thread about the hypocrisy of both of these, like kind of these women being pitted yeah. against each other, and how positive every single thing about Kate is versus how disparaging and negative it is on Megan. And
right.
And there's an interview going around Twitter this morning, actually, from like an awful guy that used to be on The Apprentice. I don't even want to say his name, but him, he's a news reporter, quote unquote. And they actually talk about this interview, and they really like still say that, you know, what can the monarchy do? What, you know, there's no problem. Like, you know, it's all on Meghan. And you could really tell how of a coordinated attack this is. This person in the interview says, how come they can defend Prince Andrew and him being friends with Jeffrey Epstein, but right. not care to defend the truth? Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's even more speculation that they decided to put out headlines about Meghan and like the whole Meghan leaving the family mm-hmm. and they called it Mexit. And coincidentally, the whole Andrew and Joe Epstein thing was happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. So they were using Meghan as a shield for Prince Andrew, which is BS. It's unacceptable. And ultimately, I think what is the ultimate lying issue is that, you know, why is Meghan an easy target? And it's because she's different. I mean, she came into this family being an American, mm-hmm. an actress, a divorcee, which, you know, in the past, you know, you weren't even allowed to marry a divorcee yeah. if you're part of the royal family. She was an independent woman, made her own money. But ultimately, it's that she's the first mixed race person in the royal family. And I think that is ultimately what a part of what it comes down yeah. to oh, is that she was made. She's. Was made different mm-hmm. and the media just latched onto that.
Yes. And that's exactly it, right? Like where we even talk about how like parasitic this relationship is with the media, because holiday parties like of these media companies, I don't know who exactly, right? Happen at the Insane. Palace.
Insane. They welcome the people yes. that they are basically afraid of into their home to, you know, butter them up and let them have a ball or a party at their house. But these are the people that control their lives. But the thing exactly. is, as we said before, they need each other to sustain. Mm-hmm. It's messed up.
It's so bad.
Do you want to move on yes. to Archie and oh, the yeah. pregnant Meghan's pregnancy with Archie? So this is really, really sad and awful aspects of mm-hmm. this. So I remember when Archie was born, hearing that he wouldn't have a title. And I thought to myself, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense. Like, Meghan and Harry kind of just want them to be normal. Like, they want their son to have, like, a normal life and not, like, you know, be able to be more free. But the truth is that this was ultimately a decision made by the institution.
Yes.
And the thing that comes... The issue that comes with this is that Meghan and Harry, they don't care about the title. I think that they're more like down to earth people. But what comes with the title is the security and the protection, which we learned is because Archie doesn't have a title, he no longer is able to get the protection. And this is a person that is seventh in line to the throne.
Yeah.
Insanity.
Yeah. It's not like this is some like random child, some random family that like, you know, is deciding. This is the direct line, right? Like as direct as it could be without being William's actual children, right? Right. And it's bizarro, right? Like it's literally awful. And Oprah, right, was us, I feel like, in with her reactions, just saying, but why? But why did this happen? You know, why is this allowed or not allowed? Whatever way you want to see it.
Yeah.
And I think Megan said it best. Like, this is the first member of color that is going to be born into this family. And he or, you know, at that point, they didn't know the sex of the child. But this is and now we know it's Archie, but Archie would not be titled. Right.
Right. Exactly. And they changed the convention.
They
changed the rules for this and they are never told why.
Yeah.
Never told why. And ultimately, it's, you know, we got into this really, really like hurtful discussion about there is a lot of talk around this pregnancy, you know, at the same time of this title discussion, they were also talking about, you know, Meghan heard from Harry that Harry had a discussion with a member of the family. We don't know who. He would not say a name because he's respectful. He didn't even want to talk about it when it became his turn to talk about this. But in the months leading up to the pregnancy, there was conversations about and concerns was what they said on how dark Archie's skin will be when he was born. And this is conversations that they had with Harry, of course, not Meghan. And what would that would mean and what would that would look like. And this is the point where I literally cried.
Yeah.
Like it made me want to cry because it is so disgusting that this is an issue.
And not even that.
Or a conversation.
Exactly. Not, because to me, right, like, first of all, how racist are you that you think that a ginger and a light skin, you know, she's half black, I believe, right? Her mom's black, her dad's white. I don't know. I don't want to say how she identifies. But anyway, this child is, what, 25% black? And how racist are you that you really believe that, you know, this child is going to look, you know, like, quote unquote, doesn't belong? Like, how racist are you? Like, honestly, you know, and like, you're not fooling anyone. You know, it's like, first of all, I don't even care who said it. Like, they're awful. And this again shows, again, I'm not surprised. Like, they're all colonizers, right? Like, this is nothing new.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they talk a lot about the Commonwealth, right? And for those of you that don't know, the Commonwealth are just 52 countries that now, I think, opt in to 52 or 54, I'm sorry, but something like that, that opt in now to be part of this kind of group. But they were former, like, territories or whatever you want to say of the United Kingdom or the UK. India is one of them. So is Canada. So is New Zealand.
Exactly.
Which is why were also like Canada and New Zealand were places they wanted to go.
Which is why the Queen's face is on the Canadian money.
And this is exactly why it's interesting because they're okay to govern these people. They're okay to, you know, go to their countries as white saviors and show up and do all of these things. But God forbid anyone that even remotely looks like you might be part of my family, right? Like,
Exactly.
We do know from Oprah this morning, I saw that clip, Sarah, that it isn't the Queen or, is it Prince Philip? Yeah, he's not king, right? Prince Philip, it's not them. It's not the grandparents that said it. Harry's grandparents that said it. So, and you know, we don't need to speculate. Like, it could be one, it could be all of them. Like, this is
I think that there's like one clear person that people are speculating it to be. But, Harry was very adamant by saying to Oprah, it is not my grandmother. Mm-hmm. It is not my grandfather.
Exactly.
So take it as it will.
Yeah. And right. And Harry also says this, like, Meghan is someone that they should, you know, the Commonwealth, the people, everyone should be lucky and use her as an asset, which is because she did so well in Australia, which also caused a lot of jealousy.
Of course.
Right. And, you know, Diana vibes. But
I know that is a direct parallel between Diana and Meghan. With that Australian tour is insanity.
Yes.
The fact, you know, history repeats itself. But you're right. Like, you know, to be a little girl, see somebody who is in such a high power position and say, you know, I can get there, you know, whether it be or, you know, even having a girl fantasize about being a princess as a 4-year-old and seeing a mixed race woman as a princess, like that is an asset. They could have, you know, quote unquote, used her, but they should have used her as a beacon of hope for all humanity. Like, you can get to any point that you want to be if you dream big enough or, you know, work hard enough. Like, you know, I think, I mean, I can't exactly speak on it. I'm a blonde white person. But for you, Sasha, like, you know, seeing a brown person in some sort of power position or like a princess or like, I mean, how would that have made you feel growing up?
Yeah, right. And it's still complicated. And something I was even thinking about because like, right. One, it's great. Representation is beautiful. It matters, period. Also, like, there's so much colorism that comes with it because would they have allowed Meghan to be on if, you know, she was even like a little darker, right? Like them to get married, I mean, like that's a question. Yeah. And I think it's really like harmful when, which I think Meghan and Harry didn't really talk about, which I understand why, like to really talk through all the pain and all the pillaging that this family, like generations of this family has done, you know, to all of these folks. But yeah, it's important that the family come into the 21st century and intersectionality and multiculturalism is a big part of that. And is a big part of like these folks need to have the seat at the table so that you can be, you know, governed more equitably, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And to me, and that's where it's still complicated because I, you know, off topic, but Bridgerton, right? Like season 2 is going to be an Indian woman as the main character. And like, that's huge because that just doesn't happen for us, for, you know, for Indians or, you know, South Asians in general, where we're always the sidekick or we're always the like awkward friend. Right. And it's the same for a lot of people of color, right? Like different, just switch in the stereotype. So for Meghan to be, you know, this amazing independent woman and really black woman too, and her mom you know who sat there by herself in the wedding, right? But like a strong black woman sat there and really talked about it. Like, it's beautiful and important and necessary, and to me it's about time.
Yes.
So that's where it's again frustrating that the press, all of these people can't get it together and can't figure it out.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And I think that it's, you know, it's definitely they used the tool of race in the media as an aspect. And honestly, you know, the Harry says later on, the biggest concern is that history was going to repeat itself like it did with his mother, Princess Diana. And it was even worse than that because of the race and social media aspect of it. And like, even he said he didn't realize how much the mixed race aspect was going to be an issue until he lived it. So I thought that was interesting. I thought that it was interesting that, you know, it, racism played a major role in ultimately why they left. Like, you know, even Harry told a story in the special this morning that, you know, somebody came up to them at a fundraiser event and said to Harry, please don't, you know, mess with the media, like they can destroy your yep. life. The UK is very bigoted. And Harry said to the man, whoever it was, the UK is not bigoted. The press is bigoted. Mm-hmm. So this is a major factor of why this escalated and why this is a bigger deal. You know, people were comparing this to Kate was getting some torment or like some like nagging things like, you know, weighty Katie mm-hmm. because she waited for a long time to get engaged and to get married. But, you know, calling somebody weighty Katie does not compare to the race aspect of, like, you know, the bullying that Meghan experienced, you know, and ultimately Meghan in the after special that we saw, the best quote, being rude and being racist is not the yep. same thing.
Period.
So point blank.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and Harry said this, right? The family has a mentality of this is just how it is. It's how it's always been.
Exactly.
And to me, it's like, exactly. Have you ever been to any training ever where they literally say for any organization, any institution, like the mentality of it is how it is step number one to how to get ruined or how to get left mm-hmm. behind, right? You have to innovate. Yep. You have to create. So again, to me, like, not that tokenization is a good thing. Don't tokenize people either. But, you know, to like not use Meghan, right, for that. And yeah, like it was interesting. And I appreciated Harry really talking about his racial growth because he really talked about learning about implicit biases and, you know, how blatant mm-hmm. the press is. And I didn't know that that 72 right female identifying members of the yes. UK Parliament actually condemned yeah. the colonial undertones to all the press coverage. But no one in his family did in over 2 years.
And that's hurtful. That's very, very, very hurtful. These people that are, you know, their royalty, but they're your family. You always expect more from your family. And it's always hurtful, no matter what your relationship was with your family. When your family lets you down, it stings so yes. much more.
And, you know, the last piece on this, unless you had anything more, Sarah, yeah. Was that Harry talked about, you know, this isn't just about Meghan, right? Like social media and racism is a different part, is different than Diana and what his mom had to deal with. But this isn't just about Meghan. It's about people that it represents now, right? Like people that look like Meghan,
yes.
that, or, you know, or people of color in general, also like Black, Indigenous people of color, all of us, like we see that. And we see your comments. We see what you really think. And that's the problem. And, you know, and to me, that shows right. that he's a good leader, that he, you know, he should be king because yeah. that's how he thinks. And, yeah. you know, like he's really demonstrating that prince like quality for me.
Yes.
So just wanted yeah. to give yeah. him some props.
yeah. Harry absolutely has his mother's heart. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think sets him different from the rest of his family is that he's empathetic. He's kind. He cares about issues that matter, just like his mother did. They, you know, they both have an interest in, you know, like AIDS, the people of the UK, and their needs. And, Harry absolutely just is more of an empathetic yeah. figure. He has a lot of heart. That's what it is.
Great. Now, yeah, we can go into the mental health piece of it. But before we kind yes. of go into this, I just wanted to share a quick content warning. You know, we're going to be talking about Meghan. She shared a good amount of her thoughts about harming herself, and completing suicide. So if this is hard for you to hear, you know, please skip a little bit forward or please stop listening. Take care of yourself, like whatever you need to do for this to not affect you. Like, please do that. And the number for the U.S. suicide hotline is 1-800-273-8255. So please use help. You have people to help talk you through this. And I wanted to kind of start with that before we went into like the mental health piece.
Yeah, thank you. So we get into the mental health aspect of it. Meghan was feeling very depressed around the pregnancy, during her pregnancy with Archie, because of all these conversations that she's been having, because of the stress and all the pressure. They went on the on an Australian tour, and I think it's a South Pacific tour as well. And those tours are exhausting because you have to be on the entire time. And then even after they got back from the tour, it got even worse because there was jealousy and it brought back a lot of memories of, you know, Princess Diana's fabulous tour in Australia. And I think that it was just like a little too close to some sour memories, unfortunately. Which is ridiculous because honestly, don't you want the people that represent your family to be appreciated and admired and loved by your Commonwealth countries? You would think so.
And they did. But they loved her. Oh, it's so frustrating. Again, to me, it seems so like A to B, B to C, so simple, but like not for the firm. And Meghan really talked about how her friends were calling her, right, a lot with the tabloid headlines, of course, and her family, too, saying, you know, Meg, like, this is really bad. They're sharing a lot of awful stuff about you. And her answer was that, you know, no, they're protecting me. They said it's fine. I'll be fine. They said they were going to protect me. And she believed it. Right. She bought in.
Right.
Just as a good partner would. Right. Like she bought into the family. She was like, no, I'm going to do the right thing. But on the inside, she was suffering. And she, I think, finally started to almost piece together the puzzle. Right. Of like, oh, I am alone. I haven't left my house in 4 months, or I've left my house twice in 4 months, but everyone around me, that isn't like her friends and family, but like people that are like working right for the this institution are telling her lay low. Harry's family, someone from a family member, right? She said, hey, maybe you shouldn't like go out so much. And all she wanted to do was go to dinner or lunch with a friend.
Yes, I know.
So this is kind of what started, right? Her spiraling. And she asked them, you know, I need to get help because I've never felt like this before. And she said they were very clear thoughts. They were very, I knew what I wanted to do. And I knew what was happening. First of all, I want to take a step back and like, how strong is Meghan and anyone else that has asked for help through this? Because wow.
Because it does take a lot. I mean, somebody I have been through, you know, therapy and just getting the first step of talking, finding a person, that's always a big leap. Mm-hmm. Like the mountain that is like finding a person and actually speaking is crazy. But ultimately, even asking your husband or telling your husband that you're going through something like suicidal ideation. I'm going to repeat that. Even something like going to your husband and saying that you're thinking of suicidal ideation, that's a huge step. So for Meghan to be able to vocalize to her husband, to the institution that she needs help, and then to be turned around and say you can't get help because it'll get out or it won't look good. You know, she says that there's emails upon emails and conversations that just went nowhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Meghan ultimately said, like, we have to find a solution. Like Harry said, we have to find a solution. You know, we have to, you know, make sure that you're safe. My family is safe. And, you know, she just felt trapped. Like she couldn't get help. She couldn't turn to anybody. And there was just even an instance where they had an official event at the Royal Albert Hall right after this conversation that she was having suicidal thoughts, and they had to go to this event. And I remember those pictures. I remember seeing her in that gorgeous sequin dress. She was pregnant. She looked gorgeous. And I just looked at those pictures and say, they look so in love. They look so happy. She's glowing. They're holding hands. They look like, you know, a prince and a princess. And, you know, it just truly, you never know what people are going to, because they're holding hands so tightly because they had this riveting conversation from earlier. And they felt like, you know, they had to put on a show. And I mean, just just having to put on a smile,
yeah,
because it doesn't matter what you're going through, because you have to put on this mask and the charade that you're a royal. It's heartbreaking, right?
Yeah. And she did ask for help, right? And Harry even talked about how he at first was ashamed to ask for help from her, because no one has talked about this stuff before. But then, you know, he also got over it and was able to really help her. And she went to HR. First of all, the family has HR. We love that.
Yeah. I wish.
I know, right?
I wish.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The complaint deck would be stacked.
But, you know, she went to HR and they said, yeah, you are not a paid member, so we can't really do anything. And we know it's disproportional, the hate you're getting, but we can't help you. So that was almost, again, the tipping point for this family, where they weren't getting security. Archie was not about to be a prince and get security. And now this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and Diana's best friend helped Meghan through this, which, again, was another heartbreaking piece.
I know.
Which all kind of culminates with the cutaway of Meghan talking about watching The Little Mermaid, right? Where she...
Oh, my God. This sent me.
Yes.
This sent me.
Where she felt like, you know, Ariel, right? Like, losing her voice when she fell in love with the prince. But the end was happy. And she does get her voice back. And here we are, right? Getting her voice back.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm thankful that there was help. There was a way for them to really talk about all of this. And, you know, the relationship with the firm isn't so great, which we can now talk about Megxit. And what are your thoughts, right? Like, the Queen obviously put out a statement about Megxit and said they still loved everyone, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But Harry said they were desperate and they actually weren't getting any help. And they didn't, they just wanted to leave the senior roles, not the family.
Yes. Right. Exactly. So they thought that they were going to be taking on like a part-time position, stepping back. So they wanted to be like a Zara or a Peter Phillips. They wanted to be like a Beatrice and Eugenia, where, you know, they're still a member of the royal family. And if the queen needs them for anything, they will step up to those roles and take an active role in whatever the queen would need. But because of all of this, I think what the thing actually was that they would no longer get security. Yes. And the whole thing is that Harry is saying, I need to make sure my family is protected, especially with the world of the way it is, the fact that my son is going to be mixed race, the fact that there's all this media, like horrifying media aspect of it. I need to protect my family. So it ultimately was that they, you know, they were not getting security, and they were no longer getting paid.
Yes.
Essentially. Yes. They his family cut him off, which I was surprised by. They're now living off of what Diana left to them. Also, they have, you know, Archwell and a lot of projects. They had this like Spotify deal and this Netflix deal, but they were very adamant by saying that they wouldn't have pursued those if they didn't need to, if they didn't get cut off, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people saying that these two people, they're just in it for the money. Mm-hmm. You know, they only care about the money. They, you know, they'll like put themselves out there. And there's like a lot of criticism around that. But Harry's very adamant by saying, I'm only doing these things to support my family.
Yes, yes. And yeah, like I did some digging, and thank you to Lauren also, the listener who sent this to us. But yeah, basically this has been done before, where former King Edward, who and his new wife actually received a yearly allowance in 1937, mm-hmm, of 21,000 euro a year, which is about 1.4 million in today's money, from his brother, the king. So there's precedent on this. This isn't something new. And secondly, the Daily Mail actually shared their location in Canada. So even...
Wow. Oh, so...
Yeah, so because Harry, I think, says that. Like he said, the Daily Mail shared their location. But still, the firm, the whoever, said, like, the justification was you can't have security because of change of status. And Harry said, you know, but did the risk of threat change? And they said no. And going back to, again, how the media, right, like spun this to say like they chose to leave, but actually they just wanted to take a step back because they needed help, mental health help.
Exactly.
And that wasn't happening. And, you know, Harry, rightfully so, is saying, you know, I saw this happen before. This is nothing new. And my child needs to be protected first, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they moved to LA and Tyler Perry offered his LA home as refuge and he provided security. So Tyler Perry offered security to Meghan and Harry, but his own, the royal family, did not.
Oh my God.
Which was crazy.
So first of all, to me, how did they just gloss over that piece? Because Tyler Perry, what?
They're like, oh yeah, and yeah, like Tyler Perry. Like, he, it was like, that was it. It was like, wait, what?
First of all, and for folks that don't know, Tyler Perry actually used to be homeless at one point. And now is a billionaire and owns his own Tyler Perry Studios in Atlanta. And it's on a Confederate army base. So, and you know, it's a, and he's now a black owned business conglomerate, amazing, you know, moment where he has all of these sound stages and all of this amazing stuff going on that place where, you know, they were not supposed to be and people of color weren't supposed to be. So Tyler Perry is like an amazing businessman mogul, you know, and has really understood what it, he knows what it means to come from nothing. Meghan and Harry like have a lot of privilege. You know, they have their name, they have connections. But they were in this moment starting with like not that much money, I will say, for them and what they're used to. I want to say that because I don't want to like say that, oh, they had nothing, which is not true.
No, I mean, they're like extremely privileged. Exactly. And, you know, we understand that. But also just to be cut off.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so.
And the emotions that come with it. Right.
That come with it. Yeah. Right. And, you know, Harry also says that he, you know, never blindsided the queen, which was another headline that there's were months of conversation surrounding it. Eventually, the queen did make a statement that after months, they came to a happy decision. So that at least was step backed a little bit. But there was a lot of talk in the Harry segment about what's everybody's status now? How's the relationship? So as we mentioned before, the Queen and Harry have a great relationship, or as good as it can be. They talk. He said that they talk more on Zoom than they have in the last year than they have in years. He has massive respect for his grandmother. He talks a lot about the feeling of being trapped. Yes. He didn't realize that he was trapped, but he was trapped into the system and he didn't realize that until he was out of it. And he says, my father and my brother, they are trapped. They don't get to leave. They don't have a choice. And Oprah says, well, you know, does your brother want to be there or does he feel trapped? And Harry says, I can't speak for my brother, but he's trapped.
And they don't know
they're
trapped, right? Like, what kind of Stockholm syndrome is this?
Right.
Speaking of Beauty and the Beast, another Disney movie, but and it's and not only that, right, like what were your thoughts about their relationship status with the family?
So I mean, these rumors have been going around forever. The rift between Harry and William, and I heard that there was a huge blow up and yada yada yada. As far as like, you know, Oprah says, and they spoke about, is that they're still working on their relationship. He'll always have love for William. And that they're just on different paths of life. Like right now, the relationship needs space, but he said ultimately time heals all wounds. So he hopes that in time that they could restore their relationship. What is even more interesting is his relationship with his father, because that got very contentious. So there is a point in time where they left the royal family where Charles stopped taking Harry's calls, and he had to, you know, Charles was basically like, you know, okay, well, like whatever you want to do, just like put it in writing, put it in writing, like, you know. And Harry had to like outline everything, email everything. And, you know, Charles feels like Harry put it in his own hands and like bounced, but it's like they had to make moves now.
Yeah.
You know, and there was months of speaking about this.
And let me go in on Charles a little bit. Okay. First of all, this man.
Oh, Charles.
Literally couldn't help his children and his family. Back in the day when they were going through this similar issues, right? Like, instead, he was over here taking calls, right? We have the transcripts of his mistress at the time, who is now his wife.
Okay. If you get me starring Camilla and Charles, I'll be here for seven hours.
You know, I just want people to know the tea on Charles, because like, this isn't just like a, oh, my dad sucks, he stopped taking my calls. Like, this is a calculated person. Like, he's not some like, oh, poor old man that's stuck in tradition. Like, he's raggedy and ratchet because he's over here. Like, he cheated on their mom, first of all. And with, you know, with the mistress, he was in love with her, I think, before he even got married, right, to Diana. But anyway, speculation. Oh, yes. So let me not. But yeah,
barely speculation. I think,
and
there's letters.
We have the transcripts. We have the receipts on him and Camilla. So he has no. We know he has no problems taking calls and of people he shouldn't be talking to. We know that about Charles. So who do you think you are that you're not going to do this to your child, right? You're going to just leave your child out to dry with now his child and his family. For what, Charles? You're not even king yet.
Right.
Like, you know, it's to me, like Charles is like, you know, literally probably singing that song. I just can't wait to be king because like, my God, look how he's acting. Right. So
I know, I know.
I know that they didn't go like talk a lot about him, but like the silence said everything to me. And
I know.
Get your life together, Charles, because
get your life together. Get out of here.
This is awful, you know, and like this is the same parent that made them, you know, and I don't know if it was just Charles, but like you should have stepped in again, you know, that made them walk behind their mom's casket for the world to see. Mm-hmm. Right. So I know that Charles literally gives zero F's about like feelings and like is all about perception. So again, that's my rant about Charles. I just wanted to say that for the listeners that didn't know.
I appreciate it.
We can move on now.
No,
but
I know we could honestly talk about Charles forever. But the thing is that Charles is now taking Harry's calls. You know, Harry feels really left down about the whole situation. A lot's happened, as we've discussed, and he's hurt, and Harry wants to work on healing the relationship. Now, if that's possible, we don't really know. But yeah, so ultimately he's in okay standing with his family. Yes. You know, there's a lot of work to be done. There's, you know, in any relationship, when you're with somebody else, you know, you need two people to put in equal amounts of work. So that's just something.
Yes.
And then ultimately, I think that Harry just said, like, if he got the support and the security from his friend, from his family, from the institution, then they would still be there.
And guess who he did get support from? You know, Diana.
Tyler Perry.
Coming from the grave. You know, like really just looking out again for her children.
Yes.
And I did some research, and this was on BuzzFeed. So BuzzFeed News. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt, of course. But, because I just wanted to know, like, this man is like, I got some money from my mom. Turns out Diana, left him an inheritance, him and William, like, an inheritance, and that is what's kind of helped them have the security, because Harry said like he just wants to make enough to pay for security, and that's why, you know, these Netflix and Spotify deals even ended up happening. He needed to find a way to live, and they never wanted to do it, and looks like Diana left, it says Prince Harry and Prince William were both left around $8 million by their mother. So I don't know if it's $8 million each or in all, but anyway. And the money was invested and gathered interest. And Harry inherited about $13 million on his on his 30th nice. Birthday in 2014. So
we love a financially smart queen, Diana.
Exactly. So again, props to Diana. Screw them one more time from the grave. We're all on her team, of course. But, you know, I just wanted to also give those stats and those numbers because it's literally because of her. I'm sure that they had the security blanket of taking a leap because, you know, it's not easy for folks to kind of quit anything, right? Like for me, I don't think I could quit a job if I don't have my next job lined up. Right. And it's the same thing. Like they had to scramble. They have a child that needs a good life.
Yes.
We love Archie.
Some really cute moments that came from Archie after you finish, if you want to continue thought, and then we'll touch slightly.
That was it. Basically, I just wanted to end with, just saying that they aren't necessarily like money grabbing royals as they're being suggested.
Portrayed.
You know, I think I said this at the start, but I'll say it again. They were doing this interview for free, but it cost CBS, I believe, about $7 million, which is why
I think that's important to note. Yes. Yeah, that they were not being paid for this interview. It was scheduled before the announcement that they were, their titles were being removed, and that no subject was off limits, and that they didn't know what Oprah was going to ask.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So thank you.
That was kind of the disclaimer in the beginning.
Exactly. And so that's like, thank you. The biggest piece of it where, they just need the money for security. And I'm sure for a comfortable life, like their house is probably huge. They're neighbors from Oprah, like their house is not, I'm assuming not small.
They're not living in a shack. That's for sure.
And listen, these California property taxes are not a joke. Let me tell you. Yes. So, I want to say that like, it's still a lot of privilege and but let's go to like the happy parts now, I think.
Yes. Okay. Number one, Archie is adorable. Yes. He loves animals. They have a chicken coop that's called Archie's Chick Inn, which I was tickled by. He's talking now. He's almost two. He's not quite two yet, but he's saying his new phrase is drive safe when people leave. And he was reminding people to hydrate, which I think is adorable.
I know. Archie is so amazing. Like, can you imagine a little 2-year-old speaking like this? Ugh, it's that royal blood.
I know. It's that education.
Yes. Oh, my God.
I'm sure Megan's been doing some beautiful homeschooling work. And then on a further happy note, of course, Megan is pregnant with their second baby. And Harry and Megan announced what they were having.
Drum roll, please.
So they are having a baby girl due in the summer of 2021. And I'm really excited for them. I think like Harry was saying, like, what's more perfect than having like a boy and a girl? And like, they're like, we're done. We're happy. Like, no more after this. Like, our family is complete. We have our dogs. We have our chickens. I want to say, like, I just hope that the baby girl is like a Cancer baby, just like Princess Diana, born in July. We'll see. We'll see.
Yes. We love a Cancer. I'm a Cancer. So, you know. I'm all for that.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm really excited for them. And they look happy. They look at peace. Oprah asked them, did they have any regrets? And Harry said no. He said that he's proud of Megan. He's proud of his wife for getting the help. They're both in therapy, by the way, right now, which is great. And then the only thing that Megan regrets is that she really believed the family and the institution that she was being protected at points. And she regrets not seeing the truth and putting all of her faith blindly in what she assumed was, you know, people acting for her, taking care of her and her family. I think that they're thriving right now in California.
Oh, yeah. And
And I'm really happy.
Yeah.
For them.
And I think the most beautiful piece of this where Harry, you know, really says like, oh, Meghan saved me. And Meghan says, you know, no, Harry saved us. He saved her life and their child's life. And again, like we can talk for hours about their partnership. But like this is, you know, a true partnership where they really.
Absolutely.
They're so lucky to have each other and they're and I know I'm like, you know, I'm thankful that they have each other as well because it's so beautiful to see it. And, you know, to end this where they Harry, you know, talked about how he's just excited to go on walks and hikes and bike rides with him and his child and his children, you know, soon. So,
yeah,
it was just it was so beautiful.
I know it really was. It really was. I mean, I truly think that they are each other's intellectual and emotional equals. I'm really happy to see their relationship thrive. I think that Diana would be really, really happy for them and happy with their decision. And, you know, Diana was children and family first and foremost. And I just like to see that Harry is going into his life, making his own path and forging that same mindset because ultimately that's what matters.
Yes, I love that. And with that, Sarah, did you have anything else to cover or comment?
No, no, I really enjoyed this special. Of course, it's very biased towards Meghan and Harry's story. There's always two sides of every story. It's like the his story, her story, and the truth is somewhere in between. So I, we know, we understand that like this is not gospel. This is not necessarily like everybody's truths, but I appreciated it. And as somebody that is an appreciator, as I said earlier, of the royals, I'll consume anything that they come out with. Whoever wants to have an interview, I'll be there. How about you? Any thoughts, anything that, final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's really it. Like, this was, again, a beautiful interview. Like, some stuff, you know, like, are we really surprised, about, you know, the royal family and the system and the machine that it is. But I just appreciated, you know, how that they were able to be honest. And I agree that, you know, take it with a grain of salt because I'm sure there's some pieces that their perception is some way and maybe the truth isn't. Thank you, Sarah, for saying that. But it was still beautiful. And again, thank you to Oprah. Like, can't wait for the next scandal she uncovers. But we're just.
We'll be there.
Oprah stands. Always. And, you know, again, I'm grateful that this was able to happen. I'm grateful that Meghan was able to speak her truth. And so was Harry. But, you know, I really wanted to focus on Meghan because she was, I think, the most silenced out of anyone and the most powerless, if that makes sense, out of everyone.
Exactly. Her voice was taken from her. But I think that they're both in a very great place now.
And with that, that's a wrap for us here. Thank you, Sarah, so much for.
No, thank you. This was so much fun.
Of course, for this. I know I reached out to you like while the special was going on, but I'm so glad I did. This was so much fun for me, too. And again, thank you to Rob and to Scott, who's editing, who allowed us to do this royal wrap up. And before we go, Sarah, where can people find you?
Yeah. So if you didn't know, I have a podcast with the great Jessica Sterling. Our podcast is called Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, and we do weekly recaps of Boy Meets World and Dawson's Creek. And we do a bunch of bonus content in between. So for the month of March, we are doing Mary Kate and Ashley March. We just did a 16 movie bracket with TikTok Nicole that I'm very excited to release. I think that is coming out on Wednesday the 17th. So definitely check that in. And so you can find us at Shit 90s Pod, or you can find me at Sarah Ferguson, not the Duchess of York. Just again, just a reminder, just want everybody to know that I am not the Fergie. I am a Fergie. But where can people find you, Sasha?
And you can find me on Monday night's Big Brother live episode recap. That comes out today, the day we're recording. So you can find me on there as well as on Silent Podcasts on YouTube, where we cover a few other shows as well. And you can keep stay updated with me. You know, send me any tweets that anything we missed at funsize_04, where we can talk a little bit more royals. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. So
all
much
right,
fun.
Bye, everyone.